Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
We're back. I'm Father Matt Malone. Welcome to America This Week. I'm the editor-in-chief of America. I'm joined this week by Tim Reedy, who's sitting in for Kerry Weber, and the senior editor and chief correspondent for America, Kevin Clark. And we are counting down the top 10 stories of 2014 in the church and the world. It has been a heck of a year in news. To number 10, we've done the first five. Number 10 was the canonizations of John the 23rd and John Paul II. The second was progress that we've made in human trafficking. Number 8 was reform at the Vatican Bank, where the Pope himself has been pleased with the progress that we've made there. Number 7 was papal travel, the Pope's various travels to Turkey and Korea and locally in and around Italy, and of course his forthcoming travels to the United States. Number 6, the progress or lack thereof on dealing with immigration in this country and throughout the world. And if we had a drum roll, we'd play it. Number 5 is, Tim?
Number 5 story is the Pope of Surprises kept his streak going with the appointment of Spokane's Bishop Blaise Supich to a more prominent position in the American Church as Archbishop of Chicago. The move was interpreted by some as indication that Pope Francis was seeking to promote church leaders who might strike a less confrontational stance in America's culture wars, but for his part, the new archbishop took pains to downplay such interpretations of his appointment. He said, "I think the Holy Father is a pastoral man. I think that his priority is not to send a message, but a bishop, someone to serve the needs of the people. I think he sent a pastor, not a message." Cardinal Francis George, who was suffering from cancer, became the first leader of the Chicago Archdiocese to retire from that role. So, Kevin, you spent many years in Chicago. This was big news, both in Chicago, but East as well.
Yeah, and I think, the press made a great deal in an attempt to compare Blaise Supich, and I think Blaise probably launched about 1,000 autocorrects in copy around the world as Blase. Blase
Supich. Unfortunately, autocorrect Blase.
Blase Supich became.
Those of us who know, I'm going to assure you that is not the case.
Yeah, but I can't tell you how much time I struggled to get that accented E off the copy. But he was immediately compared to his predecessor, Cardinal Francis George, and. He acknowledged during his first press conference, I thought was interesting. He said, "Look, everyone's style is going to be different." The media was attempting to create a very definitive break here, and that Pope Francis was sending this message that cultural warriors, which the presumption being that Cardinal George was a cultural warrior, and Archbishop Supich is going to be just a pastoral manager of the archdiocese, that this was going to be a new trend. But Archbishop Supich really went out of his way to stress continuity and to just acknowledge, yes, I will be different because I'm a different person. And there will be differences in style. There will be differences in interests because I am not Cardinal George. That is clear. So I think people in Chicago are looking forward to seeing what those changes are going to be, what the change in tone is going to mean, what the change in focus is going to mean for the archdiocese. Right out of the blocks, Archbishop Supich brought up immigration reform as an issue that he thinks is of great significance to the Chicago Archdiocese and the National Church. And, I think it's going to be a very exciting time for the Church in America. Chicago has been the cauldron of change within the church. Right. It's been the lab for the rest of the church in the United States and the world. So it's going to be interesting to see if it can return to that role.
Yeah, and this was a big story. And as you know, we were very pleased to co-produce with NBC News a profile of Blaise Supich that appeared on NBC Nightly News in November, just prior to his installation. And one of the things that really struck me when I was out there in Spokane and had an opportunity to spend some time with him was how much like Francis he is. He hasn't changed who he is because there's a different pope. He was like Francis before Francis, right? He has a real pastor's heart and a pastor's touch, and it was very clear to me why the Pope would choose him. one thing that he said in our interview, which I thought was really striking, was, he said, you know, with all the challenges that we face, what is the quality we need most in our priests at this moment in the United States? And he said, we need priests who are focused on living out their baptism and not their ordination. And I thought, what a great way to think about approaching the problem of clericalism that plagues every part of the church.
Yeah, and a very impressive man. He's written for America many times, and we should point that out, and is somebody who is a great friend of the magazine, and hopefully will continue to be, but he's been a big support to us. But I think one of the interesting things that we wrote about was the connections between, a lot of people focus on the differences with George and Bernardine before him, but in terms of social justice ministry, you had Cardinal George, race relations. This was something that he helped write a letter, a pastoral letter on. This was very important to him. So I think in many ways we can see Archbishop Supich carrying on that legacy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what the two men have in common is far more than what they doubt. And they're both men of prayer. They're both committed disciples of Jesus Christ, and they are both seeking the common good in the public square and care deeply about Chicago and the nation. And you know, so that in addition to welcoming Bishop Supich, it's important that we express our gratitude and thanks to Cardinal George as well.
Well, we can move on to story number four, which is the Apostolic Visitation Report. This just came out last week. On December 16th, the Vatican released the final report of the Apostolic Visitation of Women Religious in the United States. After what had been a controversial process, the final report was effusive in its praise for the role of U.S. women religious and church in American life. The 5,000-word report was described as affirmative and realistic. Though it set a conciliatory tone, it did not neglect to summarize the future problems and challenges the apostolic visitors and the women themselves see in their communities. The visitation was carried out between 2009 and 2012 with detailed questionnaires and on-site visits, mainly by other women religious. Though initially met with some resistance, according to many who participated, the process ended up promoting a greater sense of unity in the church and helped the women religious become more aware of how God is working in their lives. Now, Kevin, what I was struck by when they had this press conference last week unveiling this report, seeing, you know, everybody from the cardinal, who's the head of the Consecrated Life congregation, to the head of LCWR, to Mother Claire, who helped run this visitation, all together, and they seemed to all be on the same page and wanting to move ahead, and that was very encouraging.
Yeah, the press conference was more of a love-in, I think, than anybody anticipated it being. There was genuine fear about how this process might resolve itself because it unleashed a great deal of tension between the Vatican and the women religious here in the United States. I think the whole thing came out of for many of the women religious was something somewhat of a surprising nature that they were going to be visited in this manner. But I think the prefect, whose name I'm terrified to say out loud, if anyone wants to try and help me with it.
You can see I didn't include it.
Yeah, Archbishop Aziz, I think. Okay. If I can get away with that and just ignore his first name. When he came on board, he pretty much he gave a few indications that he wanted this situation to resolve in a way of full of reconciliation and outreach, really, and he kind of inverted the process so that it became sort of a dialogue and a way for women religious to talk about the problems that they face in the 21st century with declining membership and various other issues that are challenging the vocations and the life of women religious in the United States. And the women who've spoken can be believed, and I think they're credible voices. They found this to be a useful experience, which was not what a lot of people thought it would be at the beginning. Now, having said all that, we still don't know how the CDF report is going to pan out. That might be slightly different.
But I think people are hopeful, and here was an example of how a process in the church should work. It should lift people up. In addition to whatever it needs to do to correct us. But I agree with you. I think it was a good example of using a process to lift people up and to affirm their work and to, you know, to imagine new directions together.
Now, maybe we can say we've got three to go in 10 minutes, so we're going to move on. And this is something we just talked about at the top of the show. Number three, the Pope's role in improved U.S. relations with Cuba. I think people who have been listening know this story, so maybe we can launch right into the conversation. Kevin, there are so many layers to this story. It had been going on for 18 months, which is surprising that it was kept secret for so long.
Well, you know, with all the leaks coming out of the Obama administration over the years, perhaps you know people were stunned. I mean, I know I was stunned when I saw the news flash right. that this was happening. So they did an excellent job, both in Rome and in Canada. Let's give some credit to the Canadian right. diplomats who participated in this process, and in Washington with keeping this under wraps. You know, and that speaks to the delicacy of the situation.
Sure, and also the fact that there were really three people who were most closely involved. Right, so the fewer people you have, the less of a chance you have of a leak. You had the Pope, Raul
That's
Castro,
how I do all my conspiracies. I try to keep it down to three people.
And President Obama, those three. And yeah. I don't think we can discount the credibility that the Pope brought as Pope, but also as a Latin American.
No, I think a lot of American Catholics and obviously non-Catholics as well might be surprised to discover that our church has asked for years that this relationship with Cuba be reexamined with an eye to a merciful conclusion. The church's feeling is that the embargo is not functioning the way the American government hoped it would. The only people getting hurt here are the average people in Cuba, and they've said for years it's time to reimagine this relationship. So this happening so quickly really was a bit of a shock, and for a lot of people it's a very hopeful moment for what could happen in Cuba. Now, a lot of other people, of course, remain very concerned that you have a one-party socialist state that is sort of governed, you know, Stalinist style by a governing elite who may or may not be willing to relinquish much more control than they already exert over the Cuban people. Mm. I guess time will tell if this rapprochement and this engagement creates opportunities that pressure the Castro regime to open up a little bit more.
Amen. So, number two,
the rise of ISIS and the persecution of Christians. This is perhaps the most troubling story of the year. It emerges out of the Middle East, where previously little-known terrorist organizations stormed across Iraq and Syria over the summer of 2014, leaving a trail of trauma and brutality. The self-described Islamic State humiliated and murdered members of the Iraqi army and claimed vast territory across the Anbar province, seizing key cities that had once been hard-won by U.S. troops. The Islamic militants quickly turned their attention to defenseless Iraqi and Syrian religious and ethnic minorities, particularly hard hit by the Islamic State were the region's tiny Christian and Yazidi communities. Now, Kevin, this is a story, the persecution of Christians in the Middle East, that unfortunately has been ongoing.
There's another one going to be on the list next year.
But it rose to a new level in Iraq this year.
Well, I don't think even the most hardcore member of al-Qaeda have been shocked by what the Islamic State militants have been capable of doing and are happy to publicize on YouTube. So, you know, this is really, I think the region is in a historical moment of despair. It's really hard to see progress in Syria. And even the U.S. and allied bombing campaigns have been significant enough to stop the halt, to halt the march of ISIS, but they have not been enough to turn them back.
And there's a bit of despair in the United States, I think. I think there's a sense that with all of our resources, military and otherwise, we don't know how to respond to this problem. And, you know, and the problem's only going to get worse.
Yeah, and then you know, in a kind of an awful way, in coming to attack ISIS, we are solidifying the Assad regime, which is continuing its campaign against Syrian rebels and their communities and non-combatants in Aleppo and other cities.
So, the number one story.
There we go.
Drum roll.
For 2014 in the church and the world.
Is the Synod on the Family. I don't think anybody will be surprised here. It's something we've talked a lot about this fall. Meeting October. Written a lot about.
Many stories at americamagazine.org.
And more to come because we're looking towards the Synod, the final session in October 2015. Kevin, big news. Where do we start?
Well, I think we start with the intermediate report, which was for a lot of people a bit of a shock in that it seemed to have language related to married and divorced Catholics and gay and lesbian Catholics that came as a bit of a surprise. None of that language made it into the final report. And so we're still wondering what that means for the formal synod, because let's understand, this was a preliminary synod meeting just to form the agenda.
Right. We're still in the middle of this process.
Yes.
And I think that, similar to some of the other stories we've talked about, the story here is the process. I mean, this was transparent. It was open. It was honest. The Pope invited dissent. He invited people to disagree with him and with one another. And that is an openness that is very fresh and new and, I think, you know, affirming.
And the story of the year really is a Pope that's not afraid of dialogue and frank talk and wherever the Spirit may lead following that that dialogue.
Yeah, to some it may have appeared messy, but for him he was remarkably calm through the whole procedure and seemed, as our correspondent said, very free throughout it. So he is confident in the work of the Spirit here.
Yeah, and as he said, you know, be not afraid. The Holy Spirit is guiding us, and I am the Pope, and I am here. and we are here at America Magazine week after week on America This Week, and we thank you for joining us each week throughout this year, and I thank my colleagues. This has been a terrific experience, being able to host the show and to participate in the conversation that America has led for more than a century in a new way, through a new medium for us anyway, a new medium for us. And you can check out America at americamagazine.org, or you can check us out on Facebook or on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, you can call us at 1-800-627-9533. That's 800-627-9533. For Tim Reedy and Kevin Clark, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.